Welcome to another episode of The Dirty Inning.
Hello.
The podcast where we talk about the dumbest, funniest, most obscure, or worst innings in Philadelphia Phillies history. I am Justin Clue of Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs, and with me is Dr. Trevor Strunk of apparently not having his friends in his phone under their actual names, as we learned this evening.
Now, see, the problem with that is I have a Justin Clue in my phone, but then I started getting emails, or I got a text, excuse me, from Justin.Clue, and I thought, who's this? My phone said it's probably Justin. And I thought, well, I don't want Justin Clue 2 in my phone.
I mean, in this case, there legitimately is a chance of an imposter, Justin, running around. So the phone is doing a good job protecting you from what may or may not even be me.
100% correct. I don't know why you're being so mean to it or me, but
I mean, it's just shocking.
Strange flex, but
little startling to see that you have so many unread text messages, folks. This is the context of this is Trev tweeting out a screen cap of a text conversation between us, in which we learned he both had 25 unread text messages as well as did not have me in his phone. And I don't know. I stopped keeping track of the number of episodes we do of this podcast, but we have to be nearing triple digits, I would think, right?
And we're also just friends off the podcast,
right,
too.
To this point, it would make sense. But no, still a maybe in Trev's book.
Could be, Justin. I haven't seen you texting from that email address.
Well, in any case, it's been that kind of week, frankly. A lot of dramatics, a lot of unpleasant scenarios running through people's heads, their good friends potentially being imposters running around wishing to cause them harm. But
it's more likely than you think.
Just on the baseball front, we maybe in the case of what upset people in Philadelphia baseball circles last week, maybe this is also the case of an imposter. And in that vein, we might feel a little better about it, that there's this new Cole Hamels running around wearing a Braves uniform, pitching for the Atlanta Braves, and we can just rest easy knowing, oh, that's just the evil Cole. The real Cole is wearing one of those like sterile white outfits and living in a skyscraper in Philadelphia, like images in advertisements have told us his life.
Oh, that's like, that's not Cole Hamels, that's Coel Hamleys. I know him, he's evil.
Well, that's the case right now, Trev. We're just looking at there's been a couple of free agent moves on the MLB market of late, but the Phillies made their move, and what we've learned is going to be probably their biggest move in signing Zach Wheeler. We kind of hoped, as we've talked about on many podcasts leading up to this one, that the Phillies were going to do a little more this offseason. Sounds like that may not be the case. One of the things we wanted to see them do was sign Cole Hamels, and they, of course, have not done that, and the Braves have. And it's a bit of a bummer.
I think for me it's mostly a bummer because it's like, because I like Cole so much and because I hate the Braves so much. But I think if you asked me which pitcher I'd prefer to have, I'd prefer to have Zach Wheeler.
Interesting. Actually, that's a good way to put that, because I would say the same thing, absolutely. I mean, Cole Hamels isn't the Cole Hamels we're going to talk about on this show today anymore. He's 36. He's had some rough stretches. It's kind of amazing he's still as effective as he is and that he was as highly touted as he was.
And I mean, you look at, because like I was thinking, like, oh, Cole must have been so much better than Wheeler. And I looked, and what I'm remembering is like the 8 or 9 games or whatever that he played when he went to the Cubs from the Rangers, when he was like pretty much unhittable. Mm-hmm. And last year he was like fine. Yeah, a 4 FIP.
Right. I think people were imagining this scenario where the Phillies sign one of these top 2 pitching free agents, and that's great news. And then their additional signing, because everyone's got it in their heads, oh, they're going to sign 2 pitchers because they have starting pitching needs. Why not sign an elite starter?
they're gonna do it because they need Team, pitching.
Teams always do what they need to do in the eyes of the fans. The idea was, Phillies, that they would sign an elite starter, slot Aaron Nola in behind an elite starter, slot maybe Zach Eflin in behind him, and then some other pitcher. And why shouldn't that lower level number 4 starter be Cole Hamels? Why not? Just made perfect sense. But that's not what happened.
I think like I'm not, I don't know, maybe I'm stupid, but I'm not like, and please don't answer that, but I'm not,
wasn't a question, so
yeah, okay, you're right. But maybe, I don't know, like I don't trust that they are just not making another move.
Oh, I'm sure they're making other moves, but we're supposed to believe, I mean, this is where we're at. We're supposed to believe that they're not going to make a bigger move than Zach Wheeler. We're supposed to believe that they want to stay under the luxury tax threshold, as both Matt Gelb and Jim Salisbury, Phillies beat writers, have reported. The opposite thing has been said, that the Phillies are all in and that they want to get Anthony Rendon, that they're checking in on, you know, they're still around the Garrett Cole negotiations or whatever. And that information is coming from national beat writers who, as Liz and I talked about on Continued Success, don't have great reputations for reporting things that are factual.
Listen, come on. So, Bob Nightingale is a fount of truth.
I have heard he is a nice person.
Is that right?
I mean, it's right that I have heard that. I don't know much more than that.
You don't know if he's actually nice.
Who knows? I don't know these people. You know, it's I don't really know you. You know, I'm not even in your phone. So how much do we?
This is ridiculous. I'm going to take a screenshot of Justin in my phone so people stop this ridiculousness.
But how do I even know this is you? Maybe you are an imposter. See, this is the problem.
Okay, look, now you're kind of scaring me.
Yeah, well, you should be scared. So should everyone listening. We should all be scared all the time. And not just because all of the people we know may be imposters of the versions of themselves we thought we knew, but because baseball is going to return eventually.
And that is truly terrifying.
The Phillies may not have made the moves you wanted them to make before it comes back, and we just gotta live with that. And, you know, fortunately, not signing Cole Hamels may not be the worst thing in the world. You know, he's been an effective pitcher, an elite pitcher for a lot of his career. He was an elite pitcher with the Phillies. He's been a number one starter for years. He's still effective. I mean, he was an all-star with the Rangers. He was an all-star not that long ago. You look at his the span of it. He only has 4 all-star appearances in his career, but the span of them is impressive in that his earliest was in 2007 and his last one was in 2016. So he's been an effective pitcher for a long time. So
he's a special pitcher. I mean, and he is a special Philly. I think that's the other thing. Like, you can't say that he's not. He's like a special player in Philly's history. I think it's just the tough one. Like, I wonder how much of our angst we're putting into like our assumptions of what the Phillies will do into like, oh, Cole isn't signing with us. Maybe a lot of it. And I think that's an easy place to kind of like put Matt Gelb. I'm sorry, not Matt Gelb. Matt Gelb's fine. To put Matt Klentak anxiety and exhaustion.
I think one more thing to note in regards to Hamels is that he wound up getting $18 million from the Braves. The Phillies Phillies offered him a purely obligatory $9 million to come pitch for them. And he wound up getting twice that to play for their rival. So that's got to feel pretty good. I don't know, maybe to him. I don't know. I guess
it would feel good to me to stick it to the Phillies.
But a team he wanted to, you know, 15 minutes before come back and play for, probably. Liz and I were like, Liz said if they'd offered him like $15 million to come to Philly, you know, it's a chance he might have taken a little less to come back here, because he said, yeah, I'd be open to that. But what we forget a lot about Cole Hamels and you know, the lens through which we view history on this podcast is one through terrible baseball. So
that's why our families are so upset about us doing this podcast.
That's why baseball fans, I mean, a lot of the reviews of this podcast, which are along the lines of why or who asked for this or why not the best innings in Phillies history. And we've talked about this because you know the best innings in Phillies history. You know those stories. We're trying to tell you humorous, interesting stories from the past that maybe you've forgotten.
Just let us tell you the stories.
But I'm just saying all this because, as you know, if you're listening to this, we talk about terrible innings in Phillies history on this podcast. And as you also know, given the first 8 minutes of this podcast today, we're talking a lot about Cole Hamels. So when we inevitably get to this episode's climax in that we are discussing a terrible inning pitched by Cole Hamels, it is not because we're trying to trash him for taking twice the money the Phillies offered him to go play for Atlanta. It's just because that is how we tell, that's how we view history on this podcast. That is the journey we take every week. And this is Cole Hamels' version of it, because Cole Hamels pitched a worse in pitched the worst inning of his career that was so identifiably bad that the beat writer recapping the game opened it by saying, "This was the worst inning of Cole Hamels' career." So this one was kind of easy to find.
Wow. All right. I mean, thanks, beat writer. That's very helpful.
Yeah, saved me a lot of time, frankly.
Just Googling worst inning Cole Hamels when.
Comma, when. Because Google, as you know, you type the question backwards into to get more effective results.
Yes that's correct.
That's correct. Moving on.
Weird that you would think otherwise, but okay.
Well, before we get to this terrible Cole Hamels inning, let's journey all the way back to the beginning of the Cole Hamels baseball story as we know it. You know, not so far back. Whoa, Trev. Whoa, slow down. Not going back to like picking up a wiffle ball in the backyard for the first time.
I want to go back to when he was conceived.
Gross. Not doing that. That is that's a different podcast. You won, friend. Let's just zoom far enough back to maybe just set the stage for the Cole Hamels story. You know,
what's that? It's a flashback.
If we're talking in generalities, a map of the USA is quite chartable across states, both geographical and emotional. Up here in the Northeast, we are crammed into teeny little morsels of regions, cities stacked up on piles of filthy snow, and generations of families waiting for the bus. The coastlines are sharp and rocky in the north and melt into sand and colored lights of increasing fluorescence the further south you go. Heading out west is to see this nation for what it really is, both in the vast expanse of space and the temperament of the people you may encounter. The plains and mountains stretch across the middle, around surging rivers and desolate plateaus, endless skies and shrinking animal populations, until finally we arrive on the West Coast, a land where the tightly wound outlooks of the East Coast have been massaged by the endless lapping of Pacific waves, and the pockets of fish taco shacks and endless summers have created a culture far more relaxed than our own.
It's amazing. People are going to hear this and think, wow, Justin must have taken a lot of time writing that. The thing is, Justin actually doesn't write these. This is all off the top of his head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is purely generated. I'm actually not. Well, I have like a team of honors English students who I do not pay, and they are just rattling off copy for me to read off here. You know,
I love how your voice became like 10 times more meatheady when you bragged about not paying them. Who I do not pay.
Yeah, well, that's how you put them in their place. Yeah.
I do sit not down. Pay them.
Well, from this sun-drenched hammock emerged a wiry, shaggy-haired high schooler in the early 2000s who really arched the eyebrows of the Phillies representatives who were scouting him. In late May 2002, lefty star Cole Hamels of Rancho Bernardo High School had just missed a day of school with a head cold.
Before
pitching against top-seeded Montgomery High School. And he still struck out 11 and allowed only 4 hits.
I do say we're going to beat this Cole Hamels. Montgomery!
That stuffy Montgomery Academy coming down here in their pristine, pressed, dry-cleaned uniforms. And they're coming down to the ragtag Rancho Bernardo school. And be like, well, I say, there's so much broken glass kicked in with this sand. It's like we can't, I hardly find this field playable.
Noted poor student Cole Hamels.
Right. I forgot to mention if they lost this game, then a developer was going to bulldoze the field to put in a bunch of expensive condos. And everyone would lose out on baseball as a community.
Also, the whole field was the person who was going to do that was the dad of the star hitter.
Right. And the coach of Cole Hamels' team, a dog.
There's no rules that say a dog can't coach Cole Hamels.
Direct quote. Yeah,
that's right.
He played against the number one seed school in the postseason tournament. struck out 11, four hit the team. The sniffles didn't worry any scouts watching, nor did the broken humerus bone in Cole Hamill's arm.
Hey, that's not very funny, is it?
we'll put a laugh track in later. I always say that, but I don't do that.
Yeah, because you don't like me.
Mm-hmm. I like leaving you out to dry.
Thanks.
Yeah, you got it. So it was the broken bone Hamels had suffered the previous year. It had actually cost him his entire junior year of high school.
He couldn't go to school. He just had to stay home.
I have a broken arm. I can't go to school for 9 months.
This has cost me my whole high school.
he broke his arm. Looks like you are homeless now. Get out of here. Damn it. They didn't put it in a cast or anything. It just dangled.
This is so unfair.
Seems like we should be able to fix this. Yeah, well, we can't. Get out.
Where do you think you are? The Montgomery School?
Ain't no rule that says a dog can't set a broken arm bone while also being your baseball coach, but he actually does not possess that level of knowledge, so unfortunately.
I'm just saying I wish there was such a rule.
Too bad. According to one newspaper, Hamels' coach at Rancho Bernardo was filming when, the year before, I guess a little over a year before, when he had broken his arm throwing a pitch, and the coach refused to watch the tape again, finding the sound of the butterfly fracture just above the young pitcher's elbow unrepeatable to his brain.
It's like the scene in Grizzly Man where Werner Herzog like asked the woman never to listen to the tape of her husband getting eaten.
I also thought of that. Yeah, where he's just like, listen to me. You must never listen to this recording.
You must never listen to this.
Oh yeah, that was so grim and bad. Oh yeah. Well, so it's the same kind of thing. Yeah, it turns out people don't
mostly
like
the same thing. Yeah, sure.
People don't like hearing atrocities happen to humans.
That seems strange. So this show has been listened to before.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They call this podcast the atrocity of baseball podcast. Absolutely. So that horrible graphic injury, which I had honestly forgotten about, that had happened at the beginning of Cole Hamels' career. I mean, it was a huge deal. Like, it really put his future as a baseball player in jeopardy. In one interview, he was like, I thought, God, am I going to have to go play soccer? Like,
jeez.
But if anything, the fracture when he came back from it seemed to have made him even more powerful. In his first game back, early in his senior year, he struck out the side on 9 pitches.
Wow.
First time he'd pitched in a game since he'd broken his arm. Now he had just pitched his team into the championship by beating Montgomery, the number one seed.
This Hamels champ just beat our butts.
And at the end, the captain of the Montgomery team strode towards him, and they had a moment that looked like it was going to be really intense, but then he reluctantly stuck his arm out and said, "Put her there, Hamels. You pitched a hell of a game." And they shake hands, and everyone clapped, and the guy with the bulldozer took off his construction hat and went, "God dang it," and threw it into the dirt. And Cole Hamels' father came up and said, "You're fired."
This is such a good movie.
That's how that ended. Montgomery's coach said Hamels wasn't as tough this game as the first time, to the North County Times. The first of many challenges to Hamels' toughness over the years. But he has size, poise, and he's left-handed. He knows what to do. He's a real pitcher. That was the vibe Cole Hamels was putting out at this point. The scouts couldn't gush enough about him. His own coaches obviously couldn't gush enough about him. And even his opposing coaches had to be like, "I hate that kid, but, you know, look what happened. Obviously, he's great."
That lefty with the broken humerus sure plays a mean pinball.
Man, you are on fire.
I know, I'm killing it.
Well, the win sent Hamels' team to the finals and solidified Hamels' comeback after his devastating injury as a junior that had raised questions about his draft ability. He wound up allowing runs to score in only 3 of the last 62 innings he pitched as a high schooler. Ooh. He went 10-0 with an 0.39 ERA. Word around the lefty was that the Padres were going to take him with the 13th pick of the 2002 amateur draft.
I remember hearing that rumor because he was like a local boy and it made a decent amount of sense that they'd want him.
Yeah, Baseball America seemed pretty convinced that's where he was going to go. I don't know. It seems like in the draft, you know, you can either pretty much lock in. I guess the earlier in the draft you are, you can almost lock in who's going to go when and to what team. But there's this, when you get into this more ambiguous territory of a little later into the first round, especially in that middle portion, where teams sometimes aren't even sure who's going to be left when they're picking. There's sometimes is this like weird hometown bias of like, oh, well, he's from the area, so the team might be more inclined to pick him. And you're like, right. Why?
But that does, well, I mean, but it happens, though. That's how the Phillies got Jesse Biddle.
Biddle, yep. That was my first thought, too. Yeah. The Phillies were, they were actually had a reputation as a team that loved to pick local people. So I don't know. Maybe they just had a bigger scout presence in the area that their team is based. That would make a lot of sense, but who the hell knows?
I mean, I guess it makes some sense. It's just like, you know, they get to, it's easier to send them there. Like, it's easier to be like, well, okay, we're going to send some scouts to Germantown Academy. Hop in your Priuses and we'll meet you down there.
Yeah, all nine of you get in, your Prius. Well, as Hamels' hometown newspaper pointed out, he could also be long gone well before the Padres were picking at 13. The Expos needed some pitching in their pipeline. The Angels liked what they saw on the boy. Both of them had earlier picks than the Padres. Baseball America listed Hamels as the ninth most appealing prospect on a list topped by B.J. Upton and Scott Kazmir, and had sandwiched Cole Hamels at number 9 between fellow future ace Zach Greinke and future teammate John Mayberry.
Thanks for saying future teammate there. That was kind.
And John Mayberry was actually in the spot above Cole Hamels.
Well, it turns out that was a really good call by Baseball America. Great work.
And what happened in the MLB draft? I'm sure you think you know. And I'm here to tell you, folks, you do. And we'll tell you more of what you already know after this break. Well, like I said, Trev, Cole Hamels was still on the board in the 2002 MLB amateur draft. The Phillies wanted some left-handed pitching. The Padres wanted some left-handed pitching. The Expos wanted some left. The Angels wanted some left-handed pitching.
Everybody
wants left-handed pitching. Every
it's kind of like people like left-handed pitching.
And the Padres had liked him a lot. A lot. They certainly scouted the ever-loving shit out of him, sending 9 scouts to that championship game he went to after they beat Montgomery.
That was wild.
The North County Times suggested this probably made Hamels the most scouted player in Padres team history. GM Kevin Towers said they'd pluck the best player available when their turn came, and they were leaning towards position players. But the Padres, you know, they needed a catcher, even though there wasn't really an interesting one anywhere near the top of the board. So, as usual, it was chaos. And the Padres clearly panicked and went with Clemson's Khalil Greene with the 13th pick.
Which, I mean, ultimately, Khalil Greene was very good for when he was not, like, he had a very high peak.
Did he? How long was his...
Yeah, Khalil Greene was good for a while. Let me see.
Oh, yeah, he was in the majors for about 7 years.
And he had a couple of years where he was, like, pretty good, right? Like,
In 2004, he finished second in Rookie of the Year voting. So I guess I didn't really make a sarcastic comment about it. He didn't show up as familiar in my brain.
Well,
so
he kind of I think there was something weird about Khalil Greene. Like, I think it was he might have suffered from depression, or it might have been one of those weird valley fever kind of diseases that no one knows about. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't good anymore. But, like, for a while there, he looked like he'd be, like, a top, you know, 5-6 shortstop.
Man. Well, I mean, hey, they wanted position players. They went with one. And that's the chance you take in the draft. But meanwhile, there was Cole Hamels, 18 years old.
Wow.
Unselected. And down he fell. No one had taken him in the first 13 picks. The Blue Jays went with Russ Adams at 14. The Mets took Scott Kazmir at 15. The A's took Nick Swisher at 16. And suddenly, the Phillies were on the clock.
Tick. Now the tock.
Yes, that is what a what a clock does. The Phillies had drafted uncharacteristically well, which at this point, I guess, was not that uncharacteristic of them. But with Mike Arbuckle and Marty Wolever calling the shots in the years prior. Sure, there was J.D. Drew, a drafting debacle and an easily made reference of Phillies sports nightmares for decades to come. But they'd also gotten Pat Burrell, Chase Utley, Gavin Floyd, and being, as the Daily News described it, quote, mostly dreadful for a couple of years, they'd managed to stockpile at least a little talent for the future. So now it was time to make another
dreadful.
Now it was time to make another move, and Hamels was among the names they'd be considering. His broken arm was a bit of a concern, but they'd let Dr. Michael Cicotti wiggle it around and determine that it was still attached to his body. They also liked Kazmir, who no one believed would be around by the time they were picking at 17. Turns out he wasn't, as well as a squadron of other deeply forgettable names, though talk of this John Mayberry kid was really starting to catch on among the locals.
I gotta hear about this John Mayberry guy. What's
everybody's
his deal?
Talking about this Mayberry kid.
This Mayberry fellow.
He'll never be one of us.
The Montgomery School will never have him.
Picking late in the first round is a bit of a chore. Given that you have no idea who or what's going to be floating around, I think Hamels is a better player than the Phillies actually expected to draft with their first pick in 2002. But they found themselves on the clock with a young lefty still on the board who was exactly one of the areas Wolever had stressed the team needed to build up. So they grabbed him.
Yeah.
And Wolever fed us a quote afterward that he probably would have said about any of the players the Phillies could have drafted in that spot. He may have the best feel and mound presence of any high school pitcher. He's an outstanding competitor with plus stuff, has a chance to be a quality starter at the major league level. There were a lot of high school pitchers in this draft, and I believe five of them went before Hamels, who was obviously also a high school pitcher. So I felt like that was a pretty general statement to make as well. But those last two sentences, I think I've heard said about every draft pick ever made.
Yeah.
He's an outstanding competitor with plus stuff, has a chance to be a quality starter at the major league level. It's
why would you draft anyone who didn't have those qualities?
My next question for you is, Trev, would you draft someone in the first round you wouldn't project to be a major league player?
I would project someone in the first round who I felt was a so-so competitor who had no chance of being a major league player.
We expect this guy to be a garbage time reliever at the bottom of our farm system for year to come. And that is why we've selected him with our first pick of the Major League Baseball draft.
We are hopeful that young Cole Hamels will be able to net us a middle reliever from the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2 years.
Were there players we liked better? Yes. Were there players who are better?
Yes.
Did I mean that skillfully or personality-wise?
Yes.
Both. do we have serious doubts about his health? Absolutely. Do we have serious doubts about his mental health? Undoubtedly, yes. Thanks for your time. I'll be I'll be back after our next pick. Thank you.
You've been a great audience.
raised some questions, but it's all just words until the kid shows up at spring training 3 or 4 years later anyway. God, baseball takes forever.
It really does.
It is unforgivably long.
It's a pretty dumb sport.
Like, the draft is the best because they're like, well, you should be so excited about this like teenager we just got. All right, now like he's put the little hat on, he did his little dance, he got interviewed in the booth,
and
now you won't see him for 5 years.
I love thinking about the guys that the Phillies have drafted recently. Like, I know, like, it's trendy to be, like, excited about Alec Boehm. And, like, does anyone know anything about Alec Boehm? Like, could you tell me anything about him?
I don't even know what he looks like. I know he plays third base. And, hey, look, I mean, I don't know if trendy is a fair enough word. Ooh, he's got shaggy hair like that.
We love it.
I like the idea of the Phillies grooming a young third baseman and having him on the team, like having his development go so well. He winds up on the team. He comes up. He's a contributor. He's an all-star for years, comes to represent a generation of success in Philadelphia.
Be great. You know, I'd be into it, too. I know that's weird to say.
But I'm with you in that I've become a lot more merciless in my evaluation of minor league players. And that's not to say that I'm doing any in-depth or helpful evaluations of minor league players anywhere. For that, there's plenty of people you can turn to on Twitter or beyond who know exactly what they're talking about.
There are people whose whole job is that. It reminds me of when Baseball Prospectus asked me to do a I probably brought this up on the show before, but it's one of the funniest things.
With endlessly, yeah.
Yeah. Asked me to do... Have I?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Asked me to do a chat, and I did. And people kept... Like, any of the chats, if they ever ask you to do it, you should do it, too, because it's funny. You end up like, basically telling a bunch of people who have extremely deep leagues that... like, oh yeah, definitely this single A prospect looks great. And so the whole time people were just asking about like single A Mets prospects, and I would look up their numbers and be like, well, I like their K9, but I don't know, control looks bad. And Jeff Paternostro and Jarrett Seidler were our friends of mine on Twitter. They were like, I'm watching Trev do this chat right now, and it is driving me insane. Like, my head wants to explode. Like, you're just responding to these people on like 16-year-old VSL players.
I mean, I think you're like, you did one once for someone's, first of all, someone's screen name was literally like, The Dirty Inning is a great podcast.
Yeah.
And they asked you about Alec Bohm, and you just gave them like a, you know, I think he's good, but who knows what's going to happen. The future is wide open. moving along. It's like, When you're not someone who tracks and follows this stuff professionally, or even just
what are you gonna
like
say?
Casually, what the hell do you say? Like, I don't know, man.
I never saw the guy play, and if I did, I wouldn't know what to look for.
There's plenty of can't miss prospects who turned out to be total misses. History is full of them.
Yeah,
and thank God Cole Hamels was not one. But I think people got some bad vibes from Cole, maybe not from him specifically, just about the situation surrounding his being drafted, because his negotiations with the team wound up dragging on a little too long than people felt comfortable
about.
Was
he a Boris guy?
No, he's been a John Boggs guy. I can't believe I knew that off the top of my head. I think his entire career he's been represented by John Boggs.
I'm just a big time John Boggs guy.
Yeah, some people are like, Scott Boris? That's the agent I've heard of. Not me. John Boggs all the way.
I love the idea of being like a John Boggs guy. Just some fan on Twitter like, I'm a John Boggs guy.
We're a bunch of Boggs heads. Yeah. Follow me. Well, the negotiations went on about as long as, you know, baseball does surrounding Cole Hamels.
A long time.
In 2002, after they drafted him, Hamels was just waiting for the market to get settled because, like I said, there were a ton of high school pitchers in the draft that year. Five of them had been picked before him. He had actually signed up to play at the University of San Diego, but nobody seemed too concerned, even though Hamels wanted $2 million and no player below him had gotten that. So he wanted to be the line of demarcation, I think, between, you know, the 2 million guys and the riffraff.
See, so like, there's a lot of things about Cole Hamels, the player, and I've been thinking of this as you've been talking about his drafting, because like, I knew a lot about it, but certainly not enough, because like, you're telling me a lot of pretty interesting stuff that I hadn't heard of. But like, the thing I was thinking is, he sounds like a Red Sox draft pick. Like, he sounds just like the kind of guys the Red Sox would draft, right?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And he even kind of looks like he would have fit in a Red Sox uniform, pretty like that era of guys with hair pouring out from under.
Oh yeah,
caps.
He's like a Clay Buchholz.
Yeah, like skinny dudes with baggy uniforms. Yeah, absolutely. That was the style at the time.
He's the style of the Red Sox at the time with the drafting policy of today.
Cole Hamels
can't be defeated.
Playing with an onion tied to his belt, you know, it's just
that's the way it was back then.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, Philadelphia was very eager to get to know its newest target, and Paul Hagan of the Daily News filled everybody in. Hamels was as cliche-ridden of a West Coast product as everyone expected.
Oh, boy.
This is from a great column by Paul Hagan in the Daily News. Cole Hamels is, from all appearances, a typical 18-year-old Southern California kid. He likes to stay in bed as late as he can until his mother, Amanda, comes in and pleads with him not to sleep his life away. Please get up and do something, she'll say. When he gets up, he likes to hang out at nearby Del Mar Beach with friends, where he'll play beach volleyball, cook out, and ride a bodyboard. But the waves haven't been too big, he said. He likes to go to movies and then grab a bite to eat at In-N-Out Burger, Jack in the Box, or Sombrero's, a local Mexican restaurant. He likes different kinds of music, rock, punk, rap, country. These days he's into... You're going to love this. These days he's into Jack Johnson and the Los Angeles-based rock band Lifehouse.
Oh, no.
Typical.
That's
it's quite a picture.
Pretty unfortunate.
Those all sound like things that somebody who doesn't want to give you too much information and is from the West Coast would tell you.
I'm a typical West Coast guy. I sleep too late and I love Jack Johnson.
And I surf and go to In-N-Out Burger, you know, like that. Yep. Mm-hmm,
I go to In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of my favorite things is Cole Hamels showing up. And I don't know if it was his first day at Phillies camp, but it was definitely early in his career. And Ryan Howard saw him with like his hat on backwards. And that's when he was like, oh, look, we got Hollywood. We got Hollywood coming in. And that's how he got his nickname.
It's really funny that Ryan Howard was like that. Like Ryan Howard just has a big chip on his shoulder. He's like, I'm from St. Louis. Later on, it's like, oh, no, none of us have chips on our shoulders. We're all extremely rich now.
Hamels was actually, speaking of those guys, he was excited to meet Pat Burrell, who had already been with the Phillies. Yeah, he wanted to meet Jimmy Rollins, who he had seen make a bunch of great plays on SportsCenter. He also wanted to meet Brett Myers for some reason. He looked at the Scott Rolen trade the Phillies had put together, ignoring all the flying spit and endless dramatics that had preceded it, and said, I guess if he didn't like it there and they got some good players in return, it's all right. He put on a Phillies cap in the press box at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, where the Phillies were playing, and said he was excited to be there. But did the Phillies ever sign their new ace to a deal? Obviously, yes. It'd be pretty crazy no. if I said no, right? But no. Yeah, so it's always funny. You know, I think one of the reasons Joel Embiid kind of like surprised me when he came to Philadelphia for the Sixers was just like how quickly he jumped into this place and how expertly he knew how to endear himself to everybody. And in almost Bryce Harper did the same thing, but in Embiid's case, he seemed to do it a lot more seamlessly and a lot more knowledgeably, by which I mean like how to be online. Cause he's like young and Bryce Harper's young too, but it's not hard to imagine a team of PR professionals, as I actually wrote at the time, being like, hey Bryce, this is how you're going to get in with Philadelphia. And don't get me wrong, it's not like fake. It totally worked.
Absolutely worked. Yeah.
Worked on me. Instantly. Still working.
Yeah. I love, my friend, Aaron in Seattle was like, hey, there are all these, I have all these cheap, all these cheap jerseys nearby at my local Modell's. They're all Phillies jerseys. I was like, what, who's there? What players? And she just said, they're all Harper. And I was like, please buy me one instantly. they absolutely, of course. Like, why would I ever not want that?
I've never thought this before, but I saw a guy at the gym wearing a Bryce Harper jersey with the sleeves ripped off. And, you know, typically that's not somebody that you want to be like, hey, man, I see you either ripped the sleeves off your shirt willingly or became so muscular that they just fell off. But in this case, I looked at that and it was a Harper jersey, and I was just like, nice, dude.
Hey, that's, you rock.
Awesome. I bring this up because, you know, it's usually not the case. I think people like, you know, they make all these new hot draft picks or acquisitions, like go get a cheesesteak or some bullshit, and then everyone's like, oh, you got a tomato on it, you suck. I'm just imagining these, like, you know, grizzled Philadelphia sports writers like grilling Cole Hamels, like, what do you think about the Scott Rolen trade? This kid who just wants to sleep in and go to the beach and like unaware of all the context and like stupid crap that surrounded Scott
Rolen. All Roland the horrible things that will happen to you later on if you don't answer this right.
Exactly. And he's just like, I mean, if he wasn't happy and they got some players in return, then it sounds good to me. But, you know, you can't tell me there wasn't like a VFW full of guys who were set off by the
call him a bum.
This kid's lazy.
Tell Scott Rolen he's a bum and then say that the ownership's lazy and too cheap.
Well, finally, 80 days after drafting him, Hamels and the Phillies stopped negotiating and reached an agreement. The holdup was about how much other pitchers would sign for and about whether he'd sign a 2002 or 2003 contract, which would impact how soon the Phillies would have to protect him on their 40-man roster. Mm. But they worked through their differences and everybody seemed happy, with Hamels on his way to the Florida Instructional League on September 15th. Mm. Now, all throughout this in the press, there was this prevailing narrative, maybe not a narrative, but a prevailing tonal sentiment, I guess, that I saw in multiple articles that talked about how Hamels was experiencing all these things that we just talked about, all these things he loved to do back home in SoCal. But they framed it like he was experiencing the last youthful, enjoyable summer of his young life.
And maybe he was.
He was going to the beach and hanging out with friends, but the writers kept characterizing it as like, you know, live it up now, young buck, because the bad shit is coming, or at least big changes are coming. And Hamels seemed to address that as well. And many other prospects were undoubtedly undergoing something similar. But it's funny to see being signed by the Phillies characterized like a death sentence. And I wouldn't be surprised if the tone of these notes was kind of generated by the idea that Hamels was such a West Coast beach bum and they wanted to really start that narrative in Philly where, you know, it's a tough East Coast sports town. We're going to beat him up or toughen him up. And, you know, I think there's, I think maybe there's some jealousy involved there. Perhaps people wanted Hamels to be more unnerved or intimidated than he actually was, that it was Philadelphia that had chosen him. And thanks to his laid back adolescence, you know, he wasn't super ready for that. So people were like, yeah, well, relaxing around here means breaking up a fight on the subway between rival breakdancing crews. So get your head on straight, hippie.
Rival breakdancing crews? But everyone loves breakdancing.
Kyle gets up to break up the fight, but instead of breaking it up, starts breakdancing. And all the other people are like, oh, yeah, yeah. Everyone starts clapping. And it's like, there's a peaceful resolution.
Dun,
and all
these people.
All these sports writers are like,
how dare you? You're not a Philly guy.
Well, around this time, baseball was also trying to avoid a labor stoppage, and in late August, managed to secure a deal to prevent one. But that didn't stop a cranky pants curmudgeon article from appearing in the Inquirer. This one wasn't a column from the heart of a boomer who hates when young people succeed. This was one of the ones in which one of those writers just asks other people like him what they think, so that the sentiment can be expressed not as an editorial, but like as the, you know, the voice of the people. And one woman was happy to oblige, the article being about like, hey, you know, I think the general idea was, aren't athletes getting paid a lot these days? And one woman was happy to oblige. Her name was Martha. She was from Wilboro, Pennsylvania. She was 62. Martha. And she felt that Americans have lost their values, her evidence to that being that the Phillies had just paid a high schooler $2 million to play baseball. Trev, have America's values been eroded because Cole Hamels was paid?
I have to say yes. It's weird that you wouldn't say yes, but okay. I guess.
You noticed a severe downward spiral of America's values ever since Cole Hamels received $2 million?
And was that
the turning point is what I'm asking?
Yeah, of course.
For America?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. Is this controversial or?
Well, I mean, just is that, that's why you go outside, all the buildings are on fire.
Yeah.
Everybody's like naked and covered in blood.
Well, I mean, read a history book. That's what the Hamels War was about.
Okay. All right. I'm just making sure we're all on the same page.
No, in all seriousness, this is just like, it's the amazing sort of like, I don't know, that amazing, like strange energy of anyone who like is maybe over 40 who has had a bad day. And you're like, do athletes get paid too much? And they're like, oh, buddy, do athletes. Okay. Well, get ready.
What is generationally, what is our equivalent of that? Is it players not getting paid enough?
It might be. I realized that would be really funny. Do players? Oh, well, I'm going to tell you all about players. I that's a good question. I think it's probably, I don't know. I found one that I had, which was, it's just like a ridiculous one too. The one I had that I realized I was just like totally getting set off on was Nancy Pelosi and older Democrats and how they don't seem to care about anything and they're just kind of like casually fight for nothing. And I'm like, I was talking to Kristen about it. I was like, did you see what Nancy Pelosi? And I was like, man, I sound like I'm like Fox News or something. I'm just like, I'm so mad at this lady. I'm like, oh, I guess that's mine. I guess I'm mad at this lady.
I gotta own that.
I gotta own how angry I am at Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's anything like exactly like that though. I think that is very, very specific to just like angry people who get interviewed.
I disagree. I think generationally everything winds up repeating itself, and I'm sure there's nothing distinct about the anger there, and it certainly didn't change anything, which is the same thing as our anger. Like, it's not going to change anything. Like, yeah, well, there's going to be a labor stoppage.
It's not
a couple of years in baseball for the exact reasons we complain about. So, but back in 2003, baseball was still going strong, and it was the year after Cole Hamels had been drafted by the Phillies. He was now about 19 years old. The Phillies unleashed him against Bellarmine College in the preseason.
I love when they fight. Can I tell you, I love when they play the college teams.
Oh, I know.
I think it's so good.
I don't even think he was. I don't think he was with the Phillies. Well, who the hell knows? Hamels attacked this college with an unmerciful skill level of pitching and a 94 mile an hour fastball. He gave up an infield hit in two innings of work and said it wasn't much of a challenge, but it was fun. In a pretty easy dismissal of some poor, beaten-down college players.
The
names of whom the world will never know. As one writer bizarrely put it at this point, even though he's barely old enough to shave, Hamels, 18, is a man-child when he takes the pitching mound.
What?
I have several things to say about this.
Man-child? 18,
18 is not barely old enough to shave. Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts. I think I first shaved when I was 18, and I basically just didn't shave because I thought it was funny, and I looked terrible.
Like,
absolutely horrible.
Yeah, you know, I had a terrible like chin thing going on one summer. It was anyway. Yeah, you're definitely shaving. That's not like old, barely old enough to shave is not 18 years old.
Yeah,
that's
barely not, old enough to shave is like
that's like 15,
maybe 13 even.
Okay, yeah, that's even, sure.
I'd go that far. On, I mean, I think it's not, yeah. Yeah, no, it's not, yeah. It's not 18, though. It's definitely not.
Right. And man-child being used as a, I guess, a compliment?
Yeah, that's that really also, weird, isn't it?
Also struck me as, like, you know, like, I don't know what exactly that it's trying to, oh, you know, he's a child, but he's a man. And,
it's a man-child.
Man-child, it's an insult. That's like,
it sounds like you're
what
calling
you call
him like,
a man who is behaving like a child.
It sounds like he's typically talking about like Mowgli from the Jungle Book and like wants to say man cub.
Right. Which again, I'm not sure if we're complimenting him by calling him that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I think it's very likely that calling him man cub is not nice either.
And yeah, they called it the pitching mound. Why don't you just, who calls it that?
The
just call
pitching
it the mound. It's the mound.
Welcome to the pitching mound.
Get out there on the pitching mound, Cole Hamels.
just an alien okay. Who who's writing this. It's like, I don't know. I did a Turing test on this article, and you are an android.
Well, around this time, the Allentown Morning Call wrote a glowing review of Mike Arbuckle and general manager Ed Wade's moves for the Phillies, including the drafting of Jimmy Rollins, Pat Burrell, Marlon Byrd, Randy Wolf, Mike Lieberthal, Brett Myers, Brandon Duckworth, Carlos Silva, and with the talent on the way in the form of Gavin Floyd, Chase Utley, Ryan Madsen, Taylor Buckles, Elizardo Ramirez, Anderson Machado, and of course, young lefty named Cole Hamels. And in addition to those names, the Phillies had opened up their wallets for Jim Thome, Kevin Millwood, David Bell, and had a new ballpark opening the following year in 2004. I mean, imagine not knowing the future but being alive and a Phillies fan at this point. It's not the worst sounding setup.
Yeah, I think I can imagine that.
if you're Cole Hamels, you're a young hurler burning through the farm system. Everybody's talking about how much you're going to factor into the future. The Phillies have done an okay, at least, job setting up your future. I mean, Trev, are you buying season tickets for this Phillies team?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if I have the money to do it, just like I probably would have bought it for last year's team. I mean, it's exciting. Like, it feels good.
Yeah, do you think that was a more exciting time to be a Phillies fan than the start of last year? I mean, I think people thought that team was playoffs or they would be disappointed. And I guess they probably thought the same thing last year as well.
Yeah.
This time, I think, it's motivated a lot by all of this. You know, we have the benefit of hindsight here. So when I say homegrown talent, yes, we roll our eyes at the idea of Brandon Duckworth, Carlos Silva, you know, yeah, sure. But at the time, you know, there was reason to be excited about these guys. And this is exactly what we were talking about earlier when you just sort of try to abandon that over enthusiasm for prospects because this happens all the time. But I mean, this was an exciting time to be a Phillies fan. And because we really look at the past in baseball as a series of baseball reference pages, all you really see are the records and, you know, how far teams fell or how much they disappointed. But yeah, this was a team that was set up to succeed. And I, you know, people were excited. I think this was the beginning of people getting excited about the Phillies, even though they wouldn't make the playoffs for still a couple of years.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I mean, like, I guess it's a little different. It's a little different only because the year before last year, it looked like they might make the playoffs before their September swoon and August swoon and July swoon. but yeah, I mean, I guess like that was the end of a really long walk in the desert. And after the Roland thing and after everything being like, oh geez, this is just, this team's never going to do anything. All of a sudden it's like, oh, actually, like, it's a good team. Like, yeah, we're not the laughing stock of the league anymore.
Well, not until they started playing the games. So Hamels had not allowed an earned run in his first three starts, throwing 20 and a third scoreless innings at Lakewood. And when he finished at Lakewood, he had an 0.84 ERA in 13 starts. That got him up to high A in Clearwater, and he'd only made one more start in Lakewood ever again, and it wouldn't be for 3 years when I guess he was like rehabbing or something anyway. So in April 2004, Mike Lieberthal said Hamels was ready for the majors now. And this was after he I think infamously in spring training faced Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, and Tony Clark and struck them all out. And I think that was a huge thing for people, even though it's just the preseason, but that was people being like, oh my God, we have a guy that can like stop those guys. This is impossible. But again, he wouldn't get to the majors until 2006. Part of that was the elbow tendonitis that kept him out of all but four games in 04. And that he had not first disclosed his tendonitis problem to the Phillies medical staff.
That's not going to endear him to the fans.
And part of it was the bar fight that happened.
Oh yeah, I forgot
just
about the bar
before,
fight.
Uh-huh, everybody forgot about the bar fight just before the season in 2005. Now, this is interesting. This story kind of turned into a mystery for me that was, you know, easily cleared up. But Trev, Razzle's Bar in Clearwater on Gulf to Bay Boulevard has, according to its website, a sultry little secret. Do you know what it is?
It has a VIP room.
Here's a hint. It's sultry.
Bunch of sexy ladies.
I mean, you're not far off.
Okay.
It's also Clearwater's hottest nightclub.
Oh, that is sultry, I guess.
This is where Cole Hamels was hanging out on January 29th, 2005. Things got pretty hot outside of Razzle's on January 29th when Hamels, two Phillies prospects, and two Blue Jays prospects were, according to Hamels, per the Inquirer, attacked from behind by a couple of drunks. Hamels was, by his statement, the designated driver. But he was also the only one who was seriously hurt, breaking the hamate bone in his hand, resulting in surgery and the missing of 3 months.
It's a really bad bone to break.
This is the thing that threw me off, that probably wasn't even as big of a mystery as I imagined it was. It was just two seemingly conflicting reports that made me raise my eyebrows and thought we were on the verge of a sexy mystery. But instead, it was on the verge of a sexy, easily cleared up scenario.
Ooh, the best kind of scenario.
So in the February 2nd, 2005 edition of The Inquirer, Jim Salisbury wrote the following in regards to Cole Hamels perhaps having a history of this sort of behavior. At the time of the draft, there were rumblings among scouting directors that Hamels had broken the arm in a fight, but the pitcher said it happened while he was playing a pickup football game.
Mm.
Now, this is, of course, referencing the broken arm I talked about when he was a junior. And if you recall, when I was talking about that, I mentioned that the coach of that team has a video of Hamels breaking his arm pitching
that he won't
in a
watch.
Game. You're right. But that made me, I was like, huh. So he says he has a tape, but he said he can't watch the tape. And I wonder if that means he wouldn't let anyone else watch the tape. And if Hamels said, oh, I broke my arm in a pickup football game, but also the rumor is that it happened in a fight, you know, is this a cover-up? Because, you know, Steven Edelson wrote in the April 6, 2003 edition of the Asbury Park Press that Hamels' former coach, Sam Blaylock, had the tape. And that was the footage of him breaking his arm pitching and the butterfly fracture that had put the rest of his career into question. So my question was, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, see this tape?
That was just enough bizarre, kind of like, why would Hamels say it was a pickup game when there's video footage of him breaking his arm pitching in a game? You know, is it a fight and we're covering that up for his draft status? Like, what the hell's going on?
No.
Well, we dropped Jim Salisbury a line to try and figure out what this meant.
You didn't drop Blaylock a line.
And he explained, quite easily, that Cole Hamels had weakened his arm running into a car while playing pickup football, but there had also been potential rumors that he had broken it in a fight. But it was then that he started the fracture, and then it was the full on break when he pitched, the arm action was what actually caused the actual fracture to happen.
Okay.
So that was the boring resolution to that, but I thought we really had something on our hands.
Yeah. That's really cool. I was really hoping for more with that. I'm sorry it didn't pan out.
Yeah, I was talking to John Stolness about it, and he was like, well, let's ask Jim. And I was like, I'd honestly rather not, and just leave this open-ended.
It would be cool if I could be the guy who had the mystery and not Jim with the explanation.
What if we ask him, and he's just like, I knew this day would come. So, with that all cleared up, we can move even further into Hamels' history. But before we do, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll finally talk about just how bad Cole Hamels' worst inning with the Phillies really was. So, Trev, we went to that second break talking about Cole Hamels' bar fight that broke one of his pinkies and set him back 3 months as far as development goes. The Phillies were pissed, seeing as how they had traded a bunch of those pitchers I listed earlier, knowing that Hamels was the gem of the class and they wanted to hold on to him and they could build around him. And they should have been. I mean, this was the kid who was going to come up, become their ace, a three-time All-Star, a four-time top 10 Cy Young finisher, a National League Championship Series MVP, a World Series MVP, and the author of a no-hitter in his final appearance in a Phillies uniform. The future would, eventually, be kind to Hamels, and then pretty bad for a while. But in the years following the Phillies' dominance in the NL East, Hamels was one of the remaining core members, but only for the next 2.5 weeks or so after the game we're going to talk about, when he would end his Phillies career with the aforementioned no-hitter at Wrigley Field before being traded to the Rangers for a swath of prospects that have frustrated us for the past 5 years.
Yay!
It was a long and glorious career in red for Cole Hamels, and we regret that we won't get to see him come out of the mound, or I'm sorry, the pitching mound at Citizens Bank Park for the home team ever again. What mound is he talking about?
This is so frustrating.
But since this is the dirty inning, we have a very specific way with which we relate the stories of history. So yes, we're going to remember Hamels by recalling the worst inning of his Phillies career, which was, to that point, the worst of his entire career. And this was in 2010, July 10th, 2010. The Phillies and Giants, they possessed a little bit of a rivalry post-2010, given the Giants eliminating the Phillies in the NLCS that year. Though it's that rivalry's most memorable moments were wanting, because both teams sucked a lot of the time. The Phillies kind of slowly slogged downhill from 2011 to 2016, and the Giants kind of zipped up and down between NL West cannon fodder and World Series champions over the course of 6 years. So 2015 was one of those years that neither of them were going anywhere fast. The Phillies were wheedling away the remainder of their impactful players, but this was a largely unwatched game on July 10th as both squads reached midseason of some soft-bellied years. But Cole Hamels was coming off a stellar start against the Braves, in which he'd gone 7 innings and allowed no runs and 6 hits and really upped that trade value. That was good news for the Phillies because they were, again, largely assumed to be trading Hamels for all he was worth at the forthcoming deadline, as well as closer Jonathan Papelbon.
I remember that guy.
Every start was an audition for Hamels' future team. And with the Phillies eager for talent in the pipeline, July 10th was exactly the kind of start the Phillies and Cole Hamels didn't want Cole Hamels to make. Now, I mentioned how this the recap of this the recap of this game opened in the Inquirer. Jake Kaplan started his recap of this game by telling us something that we might have already guessed. This game featured the worst inning of Cole Hamels' career. Hamels allowed 12 hits, a career worst, 9 earned runs, a career worst, and the Giants logged 22 hits on the day, their highest 9-inning total since moving to San Francisco and the highest hit total the Phillies had allowed in 8 years.
Since moving to San Francisco, that is rough.
Ryan Lawrence in the Daily News wrote, "Watching Cole Hamels at AT&T Park on Friday night was not the rock-bottom moment of the 2015 season, although you could argue the case if he had been removed from the game with a season-ending injury. Here's what seeing Hamels get beaten and bloodied against the defending world champion San Francisco Giants was. Demoralizing." And that's, like, that's true. And yes, I mean, I think the fairer characterization is in that first paragraph where he's like, this could have been worse, but only if he had suffered bodily harm severe enough that he couldn't do his job anymore. Yeah. And this was supposed to be, this could have been a good game. It was Hamels versus Madison Bumgarner, two players who had been, they had both been in the league a while at this point, and 5 years on since this game took place, they are both not only still in baseball, but are also wanted commodities on the free agent or trade market.
That's correct.
Bumgarner wasn't exactly dominant this day, but he kept the Phillies off the board before departing after 5 2/3 innings. It helped that the Giants staked him 10 runs.
Okay.
Yeah, so Hamels did.
I don't think he's going to have any trouble doing okay then.
Hamels did not have a good day, and mostly it was not good in the bottom of the fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, so remember Sam Blaylock, Hamels' high school coach?
Was he hitting that day?
Center of a lot of these. Nah, he told San Diego Magazine in 2009 that about Cole Hamels. He'll take on any challenge, and he'll survive. Hamels tested that theory on July 10th, 2015, when he helped give up 8 runs in the bottom of the fourth inning against the San Francisco Giants. Now, this is I'm going to read you the names of these Giants batters, and, you know, They're pretty familiar because this wasn't that long ago. But some of them, you're just like, why? Why did it have to be this way?
I think that's like all of the Giants for me.
Yeah, that's true. This is a pretty Giants team. Brandon Crawford led off, and Cole Hamels struck him out. And Brandon Crawford was no slouch, but Cole Hamels got him on 3 pitches. And, you know, cool. We're having a good time.
Fine.
Having a good time.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Brandon Belt comes up and crushes a ground rule double to deep left center. And then you get to the real heart of the order when Justin Maxwell can come up and face
Justin Maxwell.
Yeah, exactly. This is the name I dwelled on, because it just shouldn't be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's awful.
At the same time, Justin Maxwell didn't really have the worst numbers against Cole Hamels, which is to say he didn't have no numbers against Cole Hamels. He's not a very prominent member of the Giants at this point, but he'd gone 2-for-4 against Hamels in 2015. Just a couple of singles, but he'd also had a walk and a stolen base against him. And I mean, for Justin Maxwell, that's about as probably good as you could probably hope.
He was one of those guys that was always supposed to be good. Always, like every year, they're like, watch out for Justin Maxwell. He's going to be really good this year. He just wasn't.
He went 1-for-3 off Cole Hamels in 2012, the last year that he'd even faced him. So that was like 3 years before. He went 1-for-3 off him with a home run.
Ooh.
So, like, he knew how to hit Cole Hamels. He just did. So obviously that's why Cole didn't give him anything to hit. And Justin Maxwell was able to work a full count and then get on base with a walk.
Yikes.
That's your 8-hole hitter.
That's bad. You shouldn't pitch around Justin Maxwell if you're trying to get traded.
I'd say Madison Bumgarner was probably a more impactful hitter than Justin Maxwell at this point. And even Madison Bumgarner managed to show that in his at-bat following Maxwell. He worked a 3-2 count on 6 pitches just as Maxwell did before him. But he whips a single on a line drive to left to load the bases for Angel Pagan.
I got to tell you, at least it wasn't a home run.
Hey, We'll get to that.
Oh, no.
So Angel Pagan starts what it's sort of a cluster of singles that is just the irritating way that the Giants played baseball at this point. They were never, they were capable of scoring a lot of runs, but they, you know, eruptions were typically held to little sputters and outbursts of 1 to 3 runs
God,
at a time.
So
just
annoying.
Just annoying enough to win the game. So Angel Pagan hits a single, scores 2 runs. So already, this game's tied at 1-1 when the inning starts. The Giants go up 3-1. Joe Panic comes up next. He singles through the left-hand side. That moves up Bumgarner and Pagan. And Matt Duffy shows up. Is Matt Duffy from the Royals? Am I thinking of the right Duffy? Is there a different Duffy? Who am I thinking of?
Do you think of Danny Duffy?
I think I'm thinking of Danny
Duffy. Well, I mean, Matt Duffy sounds like a friggin' Royals guy.
Matt Duffy, I mean, he was, his rookie year was in 2014. Well, his real rookie year was in 2015, actually, this year. And he finished second behind Chris Bryant.
Huh.
He finished above Noah Syndergaard and Jock Peterson and Justin Bour. But yeah, that's...
Yeah, that's... Man, and then he just kind of disappeared forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's what guys typically do on this podcast. I mean, he played in 2016, didn't play in 2017, but he was with the Rays. He's been with the Rays. He was in 2018. He played 132 games with the Rays. Last year, he only played 46 games with them. Yeah.
He was with the Rays last year?
Yeah.
The thing that surprises me about that is not that he was with the Rays or with some team and only played 20 games. The thing that surprises me about that is that the Rays only played him for that long. Like, he seems like a Rays guy who would be, I don't know, have played 125 games and maybe like 200 at-bats.
Oh, hey, I mean, you're not wrong. He played 132 games for the Rays in 2018, and he had the 7th highest WAR on the team. So
there you go.
That's a Rays move, absolutely.
That is, yeah, that's 100% the Rays. Like, that's just,
yeah,
you can't draw it up any better.
Oh, yeah, you sure can't, and that's why Matt Duffy slaps a single ground ball through shortstop second base, and that scores 2 more runs. Now it's 5-1. That brings up Buster Posey, who is about as menacing a Giants hitter as you're going to face. He hits a single, line drive to shallow left, loads the bases again, and up comes Hunter Pence.
Oh.
Now, Trevor... How tight do you consider Hunter Pence being as part of that that group of Phillies that we loved so much? Like, I know he came in at the end, but when he came in, we were so excited.
I wasn't.
Let's go eat. He had a catchphrase almost immediately. He had
eat was kind of cool. I will say that
advertising deal with the bread Lizio's was it? Lizio's?
I don't actually remember that advertising deal.
Yeah, it was like he was pretending to row a boat with 2 loaves of bread. I remember this. Yeah, Lysio's Bakery, I'm pretty
sure.
Like,
is that just the Bible?
That's who he shilled for.
Okay.
He had the Philadelphia Magazine cover where he was dressed like an old-timey baseball player, and I think the headline was "The Next Great Philly."
Oh, but yeah, I do remember that. That was really stupid.
We were setting him up to be a member of this team. And, you know, it felt natural. The Phillies dealt for Hunter Pence with the Astros, who was like basically their farm team at that era. Any need that the Phillies had that they felt like they could get from the Astros, they got Roy Oswalt from them. They got Brad Lidge from them. They got Michael Bourne from them. And they got Hunter Pence from them when they needed an outfielder and somebody to hit behind Ryan Howard. So Hunter Pence was like a goofy, lovable, kind of like a deer in a baseball uniform. And yeah, he was just here for that half of 2011 and then half of 2012. And then he was traded and good Phillies time was just kind of over. So him and Shane Victorino getting traded kind of signified like the end. That's the fun's over in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And it certainly was over this day. Hunter Pence, with the Giants, the team he was traded to from the Phillies, still making it work. Hunter Pence steps up to the plate, works a 2-1 count, and on the 4th pitch of the at-bat, crushes a Cole Hamels delivery deep down the right field line, bringing everybody home and making it an 8-run inning for the San Francisco Giants.
Why is he able to be good? Like, I don't understand Hunter Pence, and I hate it. I just, like, I don't like that he is good. It bothers me a lot.
I do not like that he is good. He only played in 52 games in 2015, too. So he wasn't, you know, he wasn't like a driving force or anything, but he'd been an all-star the year before with the Giants. So, you know, friggin' was what it friggin' was like it. At this point.
I hate it.
Yeah. Cole Hamels got the hook. Jake Diekman came in, cleaned up. Phillies really lost this game, 15-2. Giants would score in every, you know, starting in the fourth, they scored those eight runs. They'd score in every inning following.
I'm frowning so bad at this. This sucks.
The Phillies went into their bullpen. They had Jake Diekman, Justin DeFreitas, Genmar Gomez, and Hector Neris hold down the fort, by which I mean give up the fort, you know, surrender entirely the fort.
Why was Hector Neris bad for a while? Do we ever figure that out?
I mean, is he good now? I guess he had a pretty solid.
Didn't he have like? It wasn't his ERA under three.
It was
a solid year, but like he went down to AAA at one point, and there was thoughts that he would just stay there.
Well, they were kind of just burning through all these closer options, and Genmar was one of them, and Hector was kind of the next man up, and you know he's not the worst, but he's far from the best. I think.
No, that's fair. That's perfectly fair to say. Yes.
On this day, Cole Hamels was far from the best. But like I said, he pitched the worst inning of his career right up against that no-hitter that was his parting gift to Philadelphia.
I was there for it. I'll say it again. I've said that a million times, and it's my one piece of pride.
I mean, he had another terrible start. It was this Giants game. Then the Phillies played the Marlins in Philadelphia, and he lasted only three innings, gave up eight hits and five earned runs.
Yikes.
That's probably a dirty inning of its own. But, I mean, to be honest, looking for dirty Cole Hamels innings, even in games where he gets beat up, it's never really contained to one inning as significantly as it was in this Giants game. There's a reason that was the worst inning of his career.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see that because, like, I feel like especially because of, like, the treatment Cole got from us as fans, like after the World Series and for like the 2009 where he kind of struggled a little bit, like I really expected there to be worse than that.
Yeah, and we're very lucky that the Cole Hamels Philadelphia narrative ended with him doing something he had never done. I remember when he was drafted and he was coming up, my grandma was like, Cole Hamels, like, mark my words, he's going to be so good. He's going to be like a legendary pitcher. He's going to be throwing no hitters. He's going to be throwing perfect games. And Cole Hamels was famously got himself in trouble in 2009 because he came back from a long off season, or I guess a shorter, more busy off season in 2008, and came back in 2009, and by his own admission, was pushing and trying, like, you know, trying to throw no hitters, trying to allow nothing, and it ruined a lot of his season, made him just inside his own head most of the time. So like this was something that was a long time coming.
Yeah,
Cole Hamels was good enough to throw a no hitter for a long time, and he didn't do it until he threw two of the worst starts of his career, the worst inning of his career on July 10th, and then finally at Wrigley Field threw a no hitter and then left the Phillies for apparently forever. And that's where we're gonna leave Cole Hamels on this episode.
Now you made me sad.
No, we'll always have our Cole Hamels memories, including the warm ones I just shared. And now we also get to have a bad one that we probably forgot about. Blech. Yes.
Hey,
well,
you know what? I think he's going to have a worse ending to his career this year against the Phillies.
Hey, it could happen.
It can't happen.
Well, folks, thank you again for listening to The Dirty Inning. We love telling you stories like this one, and we'll be telling you more stories. We'll have a Christmas episode coming up right before the holiday.
It's going to be Christmas soon.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite Phillies podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and this podcast, The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We also have a bunch of Patreon content that can be inside of your ears in exchange for only the greasiest of your $5 bills. People say I'll get a lot more people to give us money if I stop saying that so weirdly, but I refuse. But yeah, we have a lot of good stuff. We have conversations with Chris Jones up on the Patreon. We got John doing a lot of baseball card content. We got movie reviews. We got John didn't like The Irishman, wrote about that, put it up on the Patreon. Want to read John Stolness's thoughts on The Irishman? That's where
they are.
$5 a month gets you access to all kinds of Phillies content and beyond. So we thank you for listening. We enjoy doing this, and we bring you plenty more stories as the offseason goes on The Dirty Inning, the podcast about the Phillies' worst, dumbest, funniest, or most obscure innings in the history of this stupid team that we like. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on The Dirty
Inning. Bye-bye.